the need to finish tonight before the Vespers starts, and I want to be sure we have enough time. So I didn't hear the bell. It did. I know somebody else offered to, and I think we can handle it if people are walking in, even if we start just a little bit. By my watch, it's about a minute early. I'm Phyllis Brandt, and our topic for tonight is dealing with losses and grieving, the kinds of things that happen to all of us throughout our lives. We experience lots of different kinds of losses. And I think it's important for us to talk about it because I don't think our culture helps us very much. What we're going to show are several things tonight. One is that all of us experience losses throughout our lives. It's a very common thing for us to have happen to us. That dealing with that loss in healthy ways will release the pain and will give us a sense of meaning that we may not have had before that time. It will give us a sense of purpose that we may not have recognized for our lives. And the third goal that I would have is that understanding the loss and the grieving process can help us become more compassionate for those people in our lives who are going through loss and will need some assistance and help. And the more we understand of what will be helpful, the more we can reach out in compassion to people who are going through a very tough time. Looking at some just little proverbs, those of you that have been to my sessions before know that I'm a word collector. And I love to take little sayings because I think they help me to focus on some helpful thoughts. The first one is from George Bernard Shaw, and the title that I put on the session is, "Heartbreak is Life Educating Us." To look at a loss or a grieving time as a time to learn, a time to deepen, and a time to look for meaning. The second one really says the same thing. It's from Cahill Gibran. "Your pain is the breaking of the shell that encloses your understanding." In other words, by the pain that you experience, you break open the shell that might have hidden that understanding. It becomes known to you by experiencing the pain. The last one was on a calendar, one of those desk calendars that has a little saying for each week. And it was, "I believe in silver linings, even if I have to sew them myself." We have to work at grieving. We have to sew that silver lining. It doesn't happen automatically. And it takes effort, and we'll be talking about that. The first point that I made was how common it is to have loss in our lives. Even if we don't talk about it in our culture, it's happening all the time. In fact, the day you were born, you experienced some loss. You have this nice, warm, protected environment that you lived in for 9 months, and when you were born, you lost that. You now went out into the cold, cruel world, and so the very first day you were born, you experienced some loss. Each step that you took along the path of your childhood and your growing up years, it seemed like it was great when you learned how to walk, but you probably lost some of the carrying around that you had up until that point. When you became an adolescent, in a way you lost some of your childhood. You moved on to a new stage. And each stage that we move into, we leave something behind. When you became middle-aged, some of us are in our 40s or beyond, you lost a little bit of that feeling that you had all this life ahead of you and you never even could think about the fact that it might ever end. So we're always saying goodbye to some stage. Even as we gain something, we lose something. Well, let's just take a look at how many losses and grieving experiences we have gathered right here. So I'm going to ask you to raise your hand if you have experienced this kind of loss. How many here have lost a spouse? Okay, very, very difficult time of grieving. How many people here have lost a parent to death? Okay, a lot of hands. How about the loss of a child? Okay, there are people who feel, and I agree, that that's the most difficult loss that there is. I remember when my grandmother was at my aunt's casket. My aunt had died of cancer at too early of an age to die. And my grandmother had lost her husband, my grandfather, about 2 years before that. But I remember, and it was really an impressionable time, I think I was about 12, and I remember her saying at the casket, "This is my own flesh and blood." And it was very hard when Fred, who was my grandfather, It's very hard when Fred died, but this is harder than that. And I do believe that that's true. How many of you, we talk about the loss of a child, but one of the losses in our society that we so far have not done very well with is the loss in a miscarriage. If you're comfortable, how many of you have had a miscarriage? Okay, I think our society just sort of writes that one off. And I mentioned this in another class I was teaching, and a person whose wife was a nurse said that they were attempting in their hospital to be more understanding of that loss for people who feel that that's not easy to talk about or they don't get much help with it. Okay, what we're doing is assessing the amount of loss that the people here have had as a way of showing how often loss happens and how widespread it is. How many of you have lost a close member of an extended family? Okay, I think, and particularly if we mention grandparents, I think almost everybody here would probably have somebody in that category. How many people here have experienced divorce or separation? Okay, another very, very painful kind of experience. Think back now when you were in like grade school or junior high or high school. How many of you had a really good friend that moved away or found another best friend, and so you kind of had a sense of loss of a very important close friend? Okay, that may be one of the beginning stages of us realizing that people aren't going to stay in our lives as kids in school. Okay, this one, now if you're with your spouse and you don't want to say this, you don't have to, but if you had kind of a special sweetheart somewhere along the line in high school or college or after that or out of school, that, you know, you had this sort of little warm spot still in your heart for this person, and you kind of remember what that was like to lose that relationship, raise your hand. Okay. These are all important relationship losses that we've experienced. How many of you have had your children move through the stage of leaving home? Or some of them have. Okay. Now, you know, I experienced that was sort of a strange thing. I have two sons who have moved out to go to college. In fact, my last will be going to college this September, so I will have this empty nest that people tell me, don't hold your breath because they come back, kind of thing. But when my first son went off to PLU, it wasn't very far away from Gig Harbor, and he was doing exactly what he should be. I mean, he should have gone to college. That's exactly the stage, and I didn't want him hanging around my house, you know, all the rest of his life. And yet, I experienced a real sense of loss because it was the daily contact. It was a new stage that there was never a guarantee that he would be back within my household. It was that stage had left, and we had entered a new kind of relationship, and it was a letting go. And there was another woman at my school whose daughter had gone off to college, and we said, how come we're crying? This doesn't make sense, because they're doing what we want them to do, and we're happy for their choices, and everything feels right. It's just that there's this tug of pain of that letting go. So we can talk about losses as losses of important people, as one kind of loss. There's another kind of loss that maybe isn't quite as obvious, and that is loss of parts of ourself. How many of you have experienced a car accident or a surgery or a serious illness that involves some loss? Okay. How many of you have felt a loss, if you think back through your life, a loss to your self-esteem, where somebody said something that just shredded you up and cut you down and made you feel just about this high? I don't know how many people make it through life without that. If you're fortunate, I think. And I don't know if people always mean it, but they say things that just kind of cut you down and don't make you feel good, and you've lost a sense of your value, a sense of the specialness that you have. I remember in college when I went to a wedding, a family wedding, and I didn't wear very much makeup, and my aunt came up to me and she said, you really can do better than that. And I even put on nylons and a dress and heels and everything, and I thought I looked pretty good. So, you know, I don't think she meant it the way I felt it, but I was really pretty deflated for a while. As I've talked to some of the people here, I know I was really appreciative of a group I was in when we were talking yesterday about feelings. One of the things that came out was the feeling of aging and some of the loss of capacities that we have, ears, eyes, energy, endurance, and that kind of thing, that's another kind of loss that everybody experiences. It's a common thing, and yet I don't know how much we do to help people with that kind of loss, another kind of loss to parts of ourselves. How many of you have lost a job? Had a job for some reason that didn't go on? If you think about that, the feeling that you had, and for in our society, for men to lose a job is pretty devastating, because a lot of identity for men is tied up in what they do and in their productivity. So a large sense of loss when we lose a job, a sense of that something has been taken away from us. I mentioned that as we go through different stages of our life, we lose we lose something each time we move on to another stage. And that wasn't something that I thought up. It was something in a book called Necessary Losses. Necessary, not unnecessary. Necessary Losses by Judith Viorst. She's also a writer of children's literature. And she spoke about this, that how each stage that we go through, we leave something behind and we have to grieve that. I think the most, you have it right there. Why don't you hold it up? Yeah. Have you read it?
I'm working on it.
Working on it, okay. I want to give just a few thoughts about midlife and that 40s crisis and, you know, how we hear about people going a little berserk about that time, and not everybody goes off to Tahiti to paint, but probably a lot of people want to. My feeling about the 40s and that midlife crisis, as we've called it as a syndrome, is that is an opportunity for us to do some things, do some work that we might have neglected before that. I think it's nature's way of saying, you know, you've been so busy out there with your work and with your family and paying off the mortgage and just taking care of things that you may not have had time to think too much about life. And I think the 40s and the midlife time comes along and it strikes us and says, let's do a little thinking here about things. There's some things we need to attend to. And I also feel that if you are successful at looking at the losses that you might be experiencing, usually like, oh, I'm not going to live forever, or maybe I'm not going to write the great American novel, or maybe I'm not going to be president, or some of those kind of things, I think that that purpose of that is to help us to be more gracefully live through the other half of our life, if we think of midlife as halfway. I think people who don't deal with the losses during midlife, I think they're the ones that become pretty crotchety and rigid and unflexible, and I think that's a reaction to not doing some of the work that nature wants us to do during our 40s. And I think some of that is dealing with some losses and some reality and searching out the meaning for our life. I think that's what the midlife crisis is really all about. There's another kind of loss that affects us. I don't think it's as important maybe as the people in our life, but it certainly can have a lot of impact. And that's the loss of external objects. Has anybody here had their house burn? Well, that's good news. You have had that experience. When did you lose a lot of things that were valuable to you, a lot of mementos? And
no, those are in the safe.
But I think if you talk to people who have had their house burn or parts of their possessions burned, it's a pretty devastating feeling. How about having your house broken into? Has anybody had that kind of a loss? Okay, I haven't experienced that, but from what I understand, it's a really a feeling of being violated, like somebody's in your space and they're just freely sorting through your things. And it's a real sense of loss of safety. I was in a car accident and I remember sort of a loss of feeling that I wasn't going to get hit every time I went through an intersection, because I was hit head on by a pickup truck that was going around a corner and just went straight into me. And I was just terrified to drive for quite a while. And that loss of feeling of safety or a feeling of trust of other people, I think, would come also with being broken into. Or even having your car radio stolen. I have a friend who has a Volkswagen, and she decided she would have to sell her car and get another kind, because for some reason in our area, Volkswagen car radios are very popular to sell. And she had her car radio stolen 7 times. Not the same one, obviously. She kept getting a new one. And one of those times, she was on jury duty, and she was parked in Tacoma by the city county building, which houses the police. And it was in the middle of the day, and she had her car radio stolen. Another time, she was at the Tacoma Dome going to a sports event, which is, you know, lots of police around. And she just started to get kind of spooked about the fact that somebody was always stealing her. You know, it's not like that's the most important thing in her life, but it had an effect. It had an effect on her. Have any of you lost something important, a memento, something that somebody gave you, some kind of an object that was important to you? It can kind of throw you, can't it? I mean, you have to admit that it's like pulling the rug out from under you, another kind of loss. How many people have lost their keys? Okay, a fairly common experience. And you just think about how frazzled you feel and how you go around rushing and you kind of talk to yourself in ways like, oh, how could I have done this again? Well, it's a very small loss, but the point is losses have an effect on us. And what we need to realize is that there are things we need to do about that effect, from the most kind of minor kind of loss to something much, much more major. There are kinds of losses that some people have to face that some other people don't. And by that I mean that some people whose childhood evidenced a lot of uneven parenting have other issues to grieve as they have grown older and realized what they didn't get in childhood. And I'll show you what some of those are. I'm going to talk more tomorrow about uneven parenting. Basically, that is a term for the kind of home life and family emotional climate where needs were not met and you did not get the benefit of the nurturing that you were meant to have as a child. For people who grew up in families where there was abuse or where there was neglect or where there was just kind of a cold emotional climate, there are losses that adults have to look at and to take some stock about. And I won't say a lot about that because that could be another whole lecture. But they have experienced a loss of the nurturing, and as I said, we'll be talking about that tomorrow in more detail. They may have experienced a loss of positive family rituals. For example, how your family celebrates Thanksgiving, or what do you do, what's kind of a routine on Sunday mornings? When I was growing up, we always had waffles every Sunday morning before church. It's not a big deal, but it's kind of an identity. It's something to, like, how does your family, where do you go on vacations? Or do you have sort of something you do on the 4th of July as kind of a ritual? Well, people who didn't grow up with families that gave them a lot, when they hear other people talk about it, say, everyone's getting excited about Christmas. Well, for them, Christmas may mean a very depressing kind of memory. I had a friend whose mother was ill, mentally ill, and medicated to the point where she really didn't have too much to give to anybody, and his father was an alcoholic, and we happened to be spending a Christmas in Denver at the same time with these friends, and he was really dreading Christmas, and that was the first time I'd ever heard of anybody dreading Christmas. And the reason for that was it brought back these memories of Dad being drunk and Mom being unavailable and never getting any presents. So some people have to grieve what they didn't get that other people have gotten. Psychological safety and consistency comes from nurturing, from parents who provide structure and safety and guidelines for their kids. And adults who grow up and realize that they didn't have that may have to grieve that. Boundaries. There is a boundary between adults and between children. And if adults abuse that boundary, for example, by abuse of any kind, then the child doesn't learn that they have any really safety around themselves. And they don't even realize sometimes that they can be abused by others because they haven't experienced what it's like not to be abused. So they haven't experienced that, and they would have to grieve that they lost that. Specific feelings. I'm going to link that up with important parts of childhood. In a group therapy session that I had, a woman was telling about the abuse she suffered as a child, and she said, I have 2 years of my life I don't know. I don't remember. It's totally gone, and I have no memory at all. And that is a safety factor for her to protect herself from how bad the time was. But she has lost some important parts of her childhood, some recognition of how she was at that time, and she may have not been able to have certain kinds of feelings. Of joy or playfulness. I've got this up here, spontaneity, playfulness, and joy. Those are all have been taken away from her, what we normally would want to have all children experience. And memories. That's another one that fits in with that. So for people who have that kind of a childhood, they need to grieve and go through a process of letting go of the pain of those experiences. And they may not even know it, because what you grow up with is what you think everybody has. And it's only as an adult, maybe looking back, that some people realize what they didn't actually have, what they didn't get in childhood. Well, grief is hard work. We talk about doing grief work. And it is physically exhausting. It is takes a lot of energy. If you have let yourself get into some grieving that you need to do, you can feel more worn out than if you'd worked a hard day of labor. It's very, very tiring. So it's understandable that people will not want to grieve, that they will put it off. Can you think of ways that we do that we avoid the hard work of grieving? What do we do to keep ourselves from all that pain and hard work? Do a lot of extra work, keep real busy, keep on the move.
Pretend it isn't important.
Pretend it's not important, it's no big deal. Denial, it's not important to me. Not really facing the impact of the loss of keep moving, don't look back. It didn't really mean anything anyway. We didn't do this one. How many of you lost a pet as a child? Did somebody say to you, oh, it's okay, we'll get another dog, or we'll get another cat, or... You know, in other words, denying that particular animal, that pet, that particular pet that you had was important to you. It's a way of saying, it's not so important, we're just going to keep on going and we'll get another one or something like that. What else do we do to avoid the hard work of grieving?
Avoid situations that will bring up feelings.
Yes, we can close off feelings totally. We can say, I'm not going to feel anything, because if I feel anything, the first thing I'm going to feel is the sadness and the pain of this loss. So I'm just going to basically put a cork right into my feeling bottle, and I'm not going to let it out. Well, the price people pay for doing that is that they lose the joy of living. They lose the positive feelings, because you can't select. You can't just put a cork on your negative feelings. It doesn't work that way. You put a cork on all your feelings. And so you can go through life in kind of a numb, frozen kind of way, but what kind of a life would that be compared to somebody who can experience the pain and then move through it and move into a more joyful way of looking at life? And there's a lot of loss of the possibilities of life by stuffing it and saying, I'm not going to feel it.
All kinds of addictions.
Good. That's another way to avoid. A way to avoid the pain in your life is to become addicted or to use substances to get away from the pain. And not only substances, but you can use workaholism, gambling, shopping, compulsive anything, even compulsive running, you know, which normally would be good for you. But you can just keep yourself from looking at the pain inside by avoiding through substances and through different processes that can become addictive. Other things you could do would be to withdraw and isolate from people. It's like, I'm not going to let people get close to me because I've suffered some pain, and so I'm just going to keep a big barrier there. As a way of...
That's what I did. I went to work and it never goes to any of my friends. And then when I lost my children, in those days when I lost my children, you didn't get to see them. You never got to see the child after it was born. And I had my first three. Were born at 6 months. And now, of course, they live at 6 months, most of them. But I didn't get to see them or get in any of the planning of any of the funerals. So I think that's hard. But nowadays, they let you see them, hold them as long as you want to.
Mm-hmm. So that was a real painful experience, because you not only could you not deal with the saying goodbye to those babies, but what you did was you kept yourself away from friends who might be supportive.
Mm-hmm.
You just withdrew and isolated yourself. Okay, and that's kind of a recipe for becoming either in kind of a frozen state of no feeling, or I think people who become bitter and cynical because they turn off to life, essentially. They haven't dealt with the death, and so they can't plug into life. I'm not going to say it's easy to grieve. And I was divorced 7 years ago. I was married to a Lutheran hospital chaplain. And I wouldn't want to wish those years on anybody. It was not at all easy, and I'm not saying it is. And yet, I feel very strongly that the grieving process was a time for me to find meaning in my life that I wouldn't have probably found as easily in any other way. And I'm here to say that you can live through it and can find meaning, and I think also compassion that maybe wouldn't have been drawn out before that. Let's talk about the process of grieving so that we understand exactly what it is that we go through during those times. You probably are all familiar with Elizabeth Kübler-Ross and her work in studying the dying and the process for people who are around the dying person. This is just a little bit different way to look at it, but it builds on those same stages that she talks about of denial, of anger, sadness, bargaining, and moving toward acceptance. I'd like to tell you what those look like in people so that you could recognize it if you're working with people. I just thought of something. How many of you work in a hospice? I know I've talked to some people who are hospice workers, so some of you are involved on a volunteer in a very caring way, and I hope you will share some things to embellish what I'm saying, because you have more experience with that than I have had. The first stage is something that I think God gives us as a protection. When we are first faced with an extremely important loss, the shock to our bodies and to our souls would be so great that I don't even know if we could go on. And so the shock, the alarm, the denial that is in stage one is a protection until we can let in slowly, bit by bit, what actually has happened, the reality of it. And you may find a person who at a funeral is, and children, who don't look like anything happened. Like children at a funeral may go to the funeral and then right away they'll go play. And somebody might think, well, gosh, you know, aren't they aware that their dad just died? Well, they can't take that in. That's too difficult to take in all in one big swallow. So the shock, the alarm, the denial is the first stage. But it is only a stage. It isn't a place to stay with the kind of thing we were talking about where we avoid and where we deny what the impact was. But it is the beginning of the process. The second stage is acute grief, and that is when I'm talking about the work, the really painful work of saying goodbye and dealing with the enormity of going on with life without that loss. There are several things that you can look for in this stage and are normal. It feels awful, but it's normal. And this might be helpful for you in dealing with friends or in grief that you might have. One of them is physical and psychological pain. And that can be seen as sleeping difficulties. It can be seen as appetite loss and weight loss. There are roller coaster emotions, meaning that at one moment somebody could be happy and laughing, and the next moment they could be in the pits of sorrow. And these are some of the emotions that are that roller coaster. It feels like you're going crazy because everything is just out there in intense feelings. These feelings, sorrow, anguish, anxiety, despair, loneliness, regrets, resentment, anger at that person for leaving us, emptiness, numbness, a kind of yearning, a yearning to have that person back, love and appreciation. All of that could go on within a short period of time, and that's why it feels like you're out of control on some kind of a crazy roller coaster with frequent mood changes. And this is another one that I thought was kind of new to me, and it made sense when I read it, but I don't think I'd heard it before. That is that there's a searching behavior, kind of like you're running movies back in your life and trying to replay scenes, and you're trying to figure out how I related to that person and what was that person like. And it's like you have your own home videos and they go through your mind. And what you're doing is you may be preoccupied, you may have a compulsion to talk about that person. What that all is about is that you're searching for some kind of meaning of what did this person mean to me? What did this mean in my life to have this person? And what does it mean now not to have this person in my life? And as a clue for how you can help somebody going through loss, you don't have to know what to say, because they are going to want to do the saying. They are going to want to talk. And they need to talk, and they need to talk, and they need to talk more. So one of the most helpful things you can do for somebody going through a grief experience is to allow them to talk about that person. It's a very important part of grieving. It doesn't mean that they will do it forever, because the more that person talks, the more they're making steps in dealing with the grief. But that's a very important service you can be to another person. Some other parts of this searching behavior is a feeling of being lost, of disorienting themselves, of not wanting to start anything, not knowing what to do. Almost that kind of aimless walking around the house, bumping into the walls kind of thing. It's because they have so much to sort through that trying to get organized and do things isn't easy. In fact, if you have a person working with you, if you're working and you're on your job and somebody has experienced a loss, you can expect that person to be about 30% efficient for quite a long time. If you expect that person to work at 100% productivity, it's not going to happen, because that person's going to forget things. They're probably going to be late to work. They're going to forget what day it is. I mean, your mind is so busy processing the grief, you don't have time to use your keys. You know, forget where you live. It's really difficult to keep it all together during that time. So be tolerant of a person and understand the enormous stress that they're going through. And so, you know, some of the rational thinking has to just wait.
How do you give yourself permission to do that?
That's what I'm saying, that I think it's difficult in our culture. We figure, well, you know, the funeral's over and, you know, day or two's gone by, let's get on with life, we're back to it. And I think we have to explain that to people and let people know what time we need. And hopefully the place you work and the people around you will understand, because I think we do a real disservice to people to expect them to just carry on as if nothing happened. In some cultures, they have women who are wailers. You know, they come in and they wail and they make lots of noise. And it's a vicarious way for the grievers to get some of that feeling out. We just say, oh, you go off by yourself, and when you're feeling better, come on and back to life. Which isn't healthy. After 3 days. Three working days. Yeah.
You just rose from the dead. Why can't we?
Yeah, well, if I was president, I'd change things. I'd make it sure that, make some kind of law that you can't expect people to, you give them time off and don't make them suffer the loss of salary either. Okay, another part of the acute grief stage, when you're really in the midst of all this, is that you identify with the traits and the characteristics of that person. In some ways, you could choose to be like that person, so you're integrating that person into your life in a conscious way. You might say, there's something I really liked about this person, and I'm going to try to emulate that. I'm going to carry that on. There's also the flip side of that, and that might be that you would choose to be different than that person. I was at a workshop with counselors, and we were talking about grief, and a fellow who was about 32, who has, I think, one child, said that as a result of his father's death, he made a decision that he was going to be more available to his son than his father had been to him. And it was like a real conscious decision that that was an important thing he was going to do in response to his father's death. And it wasn't that he didn't appreciate his dad, but he was real conscious of how important that father role is to a child. And he was going to make a decision to do that. I don't know if any of you know Elmer Witt, who was the director here. I haven't asked him if I could say this, but what he has decided in terms of this conscious decision to do something as a result of a death, as a result of his wife's and his daughter's death, he's decided that he's going to keep very close tabs with his two granddaughters, and they live in Washington, D.C. And he has done that during this last winter. It's like passing along something, a conscious decision to give something back or do something to promote maybe the spirit or the good qualities of a person who has died. So part of that acute grief is dealing with what this death means and what am I going to take from it. For myself, after my mother died, I decided that I was going to be sure I wasn't lost in being the role of a wife and a mother, which is how I felt at the time, in which I felt my mother had never really gotten past that stage. It seemed like after my two sisters were younger and after they all left and go to college, it felt to me that she never felt the joy of life as much as she had when we were all at home. And I felt like I didn't want to have that happen, that after my children left, I would kind of have this void in my life. And so that was a real conscious decision, and I poured all that energy into being a potter at the time, because that was a career that I could use when my children were small and something I wanted to do. And all the energy that I put into that came directly from the realization that my mom had had kind of a void there after that stage of her life, and I didn't want to repeat that. So that's an important part of taking something from the grieving experience to carry us on through it. Finding a new meaning, finding out what life is like without this person, but doing it in a way that adds to the meaning, adds to the consciousness of the purpose that we have in our lives. Okay, the next stage is called the integration of the loss. Sometimes the word acceptance is used, and I have a little trouble with that because it sounds like then you're saying, well, it's okay. And I like the integration better. It's like at this point now, and there's two ways that this stage can happen. One is favorable and one is not favorable. And in the favorable integration, the pain and the crying and the depression lessens. You can remember memories now of that person without all the pain. They become more poignant and valuable memories, but they don't tear you up so much when you like see the person's picture or an object, something that they had that they passed on to you. There isn't the pain involved with it as much as just a more positive and a more meaningful remembrance, but without the pain involved. The favorable integration stage also includes awareness of your growth, that you have moved through this and you're now not back, you're not back in the intense grief that you were, that you can now see that you've moved and you're beginning to reach out. Maybe now you will be more wanting to see your friends. Maybe now you can say, I can make it all the way till 2 o'clock at work without falling apart once. You know, you can begin to see the improvement, and you can sense that you've grown and that you've become maybe a more compassionate person. You can begin to see how you can reach out to other people. If the outcome is unfavorable, and by that I mean you don't allow yourself the feelings, you don't allow yourself the time to grieve, what happens is you can close off to people, you can become reluctant to trust anybody or get close to anybody, you can have recurring physical pain, recurring sleep difficulties. It can come out physically as well as psychologically. You can have no feelings at all. And you can become extremely vulnerable to other losses or separations. And so you might say, I'm just not even going to let anything happen to let myself hurt that much again. That would be a sign that you haven't really dealt favorably with the whole process. Well, how do we grieve? What do we do? What kinds of things are helpful for us? These are really in really vague terms, and I'd like to give maybe just a few examples. Basically, what we have to do is face the loss and not deny its impact. We have to say, this hurts. This is really painful. And one of the ways that we can do that is we can talk to people. We can write out journals, just write out your feelings. We can take time to be by ourselves, look through photograph albums, and let those tears come out as we look through times with that person. We can go to the grave. But all of those mean we have to give ourselves time. We have to give ourselves that space. We have to allow that to happen. One of the things that I found helpful, it was 10 years after my mother had died, and my children were really young at the time when she died, and I was regretting the fact that she didn't get to have that time, nor they with her. So I sat down at a typewriter one time when I felt like, you know, I don't think I'm done with this. I'm finding myself crying at times when I don't think it's really appropriate, and I just had the sense that there was a lot down there that I'd stifled and held in. So I wrote on a typewriter. I was clicking and clacking away, and I had about 5 pages. And by the time I had those 5 pages, I'd gone through an entire box of Kleenex. But what I had done is I had told my mother all the things about the children that she didn't know because it was past the time that she died. I told them about myself. I talked to her about things that I remembered from my childhood that I appreciated. I think I told her some things I was angry at her about. And I really felt a lot better after doing that. And there was I was exhausted. I took a day off from work, actually, because I was just feeling this sense of like I was going to cry at any minute. And I just felt like I needed to do this. So I took a day off from school, from work, and called in sick, and I really felt that that was appropriate to do that. And at the end of the day, I was so exhausted, I could hardly make dinner for my family, and I was just wiped out. But I feel it made a big step for me in dealing with that loss. I really felt that that had been a valuable time. So even if the person isn't there, you can even communicate some things, and And it's a way of expressing your appreciation and doing some of that grieving. And this is the absolute message I want to make tonight. The second thing about how to grieve, let yourself feel all the feelings. Now the scary part about getting into that is you think you'll never get out, that you're going to be in that trench of sadness or anger or both in a way that you'll never ever climb back out. That's going to be it. The rest of my life I'm going to just be crying, walking around with the Kleenex box. Well, it doesn't really happen. It will spend its course. And the more you allow it to happen, the quicker it will happen. There only is one way through grief, and that's through it. There's no shortcuts. There's no turnarounds. There's no way to go around it. And you need to feel it. And by feeling it, it can include talking about it, expressing it to others, allowing other people to be near you and comfort you, a safe person, while you're doing that. You can take care of yourself while you're doing it. Sometimes just taking a nice warm bath afterwards and taking care of yourself is a way of affirming who you are and affirming that you can take care of yourself while you're hurting. And then the other message is that all of the grieving that we do, all the heartbreak, is a way for us to be challenged, to restructure, to re-identify ourselves, to reaffirm the meaning. And I think a feeling of humanness and a feeling of compassion that really comes out of that experience, of accepting that as a challenge, that is something that's going to deepen you. I think anybody that's been through a grieving process knows how to affirm life, and they also know how to respond to others. And those of you that work for hospice probably are there because you have gone through a loss yourself, and you're now using your experience to reach out to others. And so you've accepted that challenge to restructure your life in a way that's more compassionate and more empathetic for other people. I'd like to have you have a chance tonight, and I think Vespers may interrupt us, but to start anyway, to talk a little bit with each other about the losses you've experienced. We don't have chairs here, and it's a little bit difficult to get together in a group, but if you can kind of swish around, maybe the first two rows kind of, or if you would like to go over to where the chairs are, I'd like you to find, and if you'd like with a person, if you're here with somebody and the two of you together feel like you'd like to talk, just two people together, that's fine, or you can get in a larger group, so you have your option here. If you have a lot to talk about, sometimes five people doesn't allow you very much time to really talk. What I'd like you to do is to share what loss experiences you've had, for one, and secondly, how do I deal with loss, or how did I deal with it at that time, and then to share with each other any meaning, the strengths, or the courage that you feel you have gained from facing a loss. How have you restructured your life or re-identified your life as a result of going through that experience? I'd like to read one thing at the end before we close for Vespers. So I will just mention on the microphone that I have something to read, and that will be your clue for your group to just turn back around and listen. So go ahead and get into groups, comfortable groups. Some of you may want two, some of you may want a few more, and share with each other the losses and how you dealt with it and what kind of meaning you may have gathered from that experience. I'm going to invite you to finish with your groups if you want to, but someone who couldn't come tonight wanted to be sure that what I was going to read for the ending was going to be on the tape. And the tape, I think time is just about up. So I'd like to read this and then let you get back as much time as you'd like to finish sharing. This is something that Elizabeth Kübler-Ross, who, as I said, was a person who's done a lot of studying of grief, has said, "All the hardships that you face in life, all the tests and tribulations, all the nightmares and all the losses, most people still view as curses, as punishments by God, as something negative. If you would only know that nothing that comes to you is negative, I mean nothing. All the trials and tribulations and the biggest losses that you experience, things that make you say, if I had known about this, I would never have been able to make it through, are gifts to you. It's like somebody had to, what do you call it when you make the hot iron into a tool? You have to temper the iron. It is an opportunity that you are given to grow. You will not grow if you sit in a beautiful flower garden and somebody brings you gorgeous food on a silver platter. But you will grow if you are sick, if you are in pain, if you experience losses, and if you do not put your head in the sand, but take the pain and learn to accept it, not as a curse or a punishment, but as a gift with a very, very specific purpose. Thanks for coming.